Well, let's get started. My name is Paul Deaton. I'm an editor at Blog for Iowa, where we are celebrating our 20th year of continuous publication. And with me today is Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst, and we're going to talk politics for a little while. Jennifer, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
I know you're visiting Johnson County this week for this Friday the 13th Tired of Being Scary event. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what you hope to accomplish?
You bet. I'm going to be spending my whole day in Johnson County. I'm going to be having great conversations with credit unions there, with teachers after school. And then we've got an event coming up from 6 to 8, and it's called Tired of Being Scared. And it's a fundraiser for the Iowa House Truman Fund, which is the group that funds Iowa House Democrats races, and the group that I lead. And we've got burgers and hot dogs. We've got outdoor games for kids. We'll have a really good time talking about the issues, because people really care about the issues. It's not just, who do I want to vote for? They want to know, what are you going to do? And so we're really excited about this event. It's at the Northridge Pavilion. And Dave Jacoby is going to MC, so all bets are off on how the night's going to go.
Well, good. It sounds like a fun event, and I wish you good luck in fundraising for the Truman Fund.
Thank you. Yeah, it's going to be important this year.
Oh, you bet. So I know Democrats have a great slate of candidates running for state representative all across the state. And with less than 2 months until the election, how do you see the prospects for gaining seats in the Iowa House Democratic Caucus?
I'll be honest with you. August was a real turning point for us when it came to our chances. The changes at the top of the ticket in July, when things settled in a little bit, we just started seeing more enthusiasm. A lot of the problem that we had in 2022 was a lot of Democrats stayed home. Not that I'm counting, but 92,577 to be exact. So we've been working since the day after Election Day to get folks registered, fired up, and engaged. Well, with the injection of energy at the top of the ticket, with the amazing Christina Bohannon and Lennon Vacom running great campaigns, and with national attention on those, we feel really good that that's going to lift our floor a lot, and we can flip some seats, bring our folks back. And, I'd love it if we can get back into the 40s and start to really make a run at the majority in 2026. We're at 36 right now. We're already at 37 because Republicans didn't run a candidate in Davenport, so we're flipping a seat already. We're off to a good start. That's how we see some good opportunity here.
All right. Great. To what do you attribute the fact that as recently as 2022, which you mentioned, Republicans continued to make gains in their majority?
I think there's a couple things out there. We're still analyzing and trying to figure out exactly why Democrats stayed home in 2022. But we do know that they didn't leave the party, which is really helpful for us. So that's why we've been trying to reach them so much since the election. But I also attribute the fact that, Republicans have talked a big game for a while, but haven't really enacted their worst policies until the last 2 years. The last legislative session included school vouchers, cuts to AEAs, and an abortion ban that just went into effect. So I think that those three things are going to really, now they're real, right? Before it was a threat, before it was a hypothetical or a theoretical. Well, now it's real. And Iowans are starting to see the impact of their policies. So it's really time for Iowans to say, okay, they weren't just talking, they really did it. We need to bring some balance back.
Well, that's great that you mentioned the school voucher program. And what you well know, and a lot of us know, is that in other states, those voucher programs led to dramatic cost overruns that negatively impacted state budgets. Do you foresee something similar in Iowa?
We're already seeing it, and it's just the worst. We know that, we've seen that they're already over budget. We're heading into year three here. And they're going to spend more than $1 billion over 5 years. It's an unlimited appropriation. I didn't even know that was a thing when I was in the legislature, that you would just have a budget item that was unlimited. And that's what they did with these school vouchers. So, of course, it's going to go over. I imagine, depending on if people hold them accountable this fall, I imagine they'll come back and want to include more things in the voucher. We've seen that are eligible for the voucher. We've seen school tuitions go up. There are no protections for parents there. We also know they're not accountable to anybody. And so your tax dollars are going there and it's coming off the top of public schools. And so Iowans from rural, urban, and suburban communities are fed up, and cost overruns are a really big reason.
I talked to some school board members last year during the campaign, and our local school board, which is the Solon Community School District, the members didn't seem much concerned about vouchers drawing funds from public schools. What are they missing here? I believe they're missing a couple of things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things is long-term understanding that public education has been so chronically underfunded for the past 10 years, and now it's only going to get worse. You know, this year, Democrats proposed giving the same amount of money, you know, taking the money away from private schools and giving it back to public schools. And Republicans actually gave more to private schools than they increased public school funding. And so I think, you know, some districts are going to feel it at different times. And so, you know, the Solon School District might be in a different space right now. But we know we're hearing, you know, the Orient Maxford School District closed because of underfunding. We're going to hear about more of these really tight budgets that are going to come over this year, next year, and next year. 70% of the vouchers, 71% of the vouchers have gone to 10 counties in the state. And so it's really those rural schools that are going to feel it first. They're really rural schools and counties without a lot of, you know, public school or private school options, but also, you know, those rural schools that are already, you know, tight budgets. We're seeing that they're going to be the sort of canary in the coal mine, but then everyone will start to see it after that because no one's going to be immune from this money coming out of public education and going right to private schools.
Is there anything Democrats can do now to mitigate the damage these vouchers are expected to cause public schools?
You know, I mean, I think that's a great point because so much of what we try to do in the minority is we still want to see what we can do to stop bad things from happening. And that's not why any of us got into this work, but we can't wait till we get to the majority to do something, right? So that's why we continue to push forward accountability and transparency measures with these schools, because Iowans already don't like them when they start to see what the money is being spent on or you know, expensive administrators like we're seeing. You know, the administrative contract is doubling, you know, over the years. We know that that Iowans, if they have more information, they're going to like them even less. So we're sort of trying to raise public awareness about the vouchers. And legislatively, let's see if we can continue to push back on unlimited budgets. Can we put a cap on the vouchers? Can we hold some accountability in there? You know, where are the things that we can try to chip away at the devastation from the minority? Now, it's tough because this was a Republican priority that the governor was all in on over two general assemblies. And so it's going to be tough, but I think if they're held accountable at the ballot box this fall, they're going to start to see that there are some necessary tweaks that need to get made. And then in the meantime, then I can't wait, if I'm speaker, to defund private school vouchers.
Well, great. We look forward to that possibility. So I'm going to change gears a little bit here. In the spring, as you know, the Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll found a majority of Iowans, 60%, believe abortion should be legal in most or all cases. Among women, it was 70%. So my question is, how do Democratic candidates convert that support into votes?
It's a really important question, and I think it's something that we've thought a lot about. Really, it's meeting voters where they are, right? This has been a theoretical. We went to court, we as a system went to court eight times to stop abortion bans in this state over the last several years, and we won seven of them. And so now it's real. Now it's in place, and people are starting to see the real impact. So I think that pointing out the devastation, you know, I just went to Mankato, Minnesota, and saw how far women have to travel to get abortion care now, and what it's like to have to take time off of work and time off of school. And I learned a lot about what that's like. The Cedar Rapids Gazette just had an article about it. I mean, I think we need to raise awareness of the consequences and the costs right now. But we also need to be bold in telling Iowans that we are proudly with them. You know, abortion access has been one of my issues since I first got involved in politics in eighth grade. And when my minister took me to my first pro-choice rally. But I'll tell you that in all of those years, I've gone through every iteration of communication about abortion. You know, it's safe, legal, and rare. It's abortion as healthcare, lots of different iterations. But now, fundamentally, it's just reproductive freedom. Republicans want to talk about the number of weeks or things like that. I just want to say, at what point does the government get to come in to my doctor's office and weigh in on what happens to my body? And women in the state, and men too, are saying, this has gone too far. We know Republicans feel that way. Not as many, of course, but we know there are Republicans who feel that way. Lots of no-party voters. And we need to be bold to show them that by voting, they can start to chip away these restrictions as well.
So the fetal heartbeat bill is flawed. And so I wonder what, if any, paths exist to fix some of those problems that strip Iowa women of their bodily autonomy, as the Supreme Court justice said.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly, of course, what's happened. And I think that, again, this is where we in the minority don't just have to sit around and wait to get to the majority. You know, if they see electoral consequences in November, they're going to have to think long and hard about the votes they took and the things that they can do moving forward. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk about over-the-counter birth control that's been, you know, offered by the governor. Nothing ever happened with that. So there's a lot of talk, but they don't really seem to buy or to believe that there are things that need to be changed. Well, if they lose some seats this fall because of it, maybe they'll start to see that we're right when we try to expand exceptions, right? The exceptions are very narrow right now, really hard to meet. And so we proposed several amendments that would have expanded the exceptions. For example, letting girls 12 and under be exempt from the 6-week ban, since so many of them are likely to be unaware of how this all works because they're 12 or 11 or 10. And Republicans voted that down. They're going to pay for that vote, right? They did not do anything else to expand those exceptions. And that's the first place to start. You know, getting a Supreme Court case overturned is tough. But if we can start to chip away at those exceptions, allow more women access to care, and really point out the importance of reproductive freedom, we can start to make some progress. And then again, we've got a constitutional amendment ready to go. We've introduced it. Republicans ignored it to enshrine abortion access in Iowa's constitution.
So a lot is riding on making improvement in the House minority.
Without question.
All right. Well, let's change gears a little bit here. I don't hear many people talking about other issues, and I know your focus has been on reproductive freedom and the education system, but let me ask you about water and air quality and the environment as issues.
You bet.
Are people talking about that in the campaigns?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's one of those things where we're trying to break through to voters with the issues that they tell us are most important first and foremost. So that's why we lead with those issues. And also, those are the most immediate sort of offenses that Republicans made, right? So it's harder to get people engaged on issues like water quality. But we do work to talk to folks because they want clean water. They want to be able to enjoy their lakes and rivers. They want to be able to trust the water they're drinking. And it's something that Iowans care about. So we work to try, you know, we certainly talk about it on the campaign trail, but we also do work in the legislature to try to get bills introduced, amendments on bills to try to show the importance of addressing the clean water issue. But we also have to be realistic in this state and figure out, we're still working to figure out a way to actually affect change. You know, the Water and Land Legacy Trust is, 14 years since it passed at the ballot box, and Iowans overwhelmingly supported it. Over the years, there's been talk about reallocating the penny. You know all of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just trying to see what's going to break through here. And I don't want a crisis. I don't want something terrible. I mean, I think we're already in crisis. But I don't want an acute crisis that's going to cause us to, you know, look back and say we could have, should have, would have. We're trying to prevent things from getting worse. But, you know, we're just not getting any interest from the other side on even listening to any of these things. So sometimes it feels like it's falling on deaf ears. But as we, you know, it's one of the questions we have on our surveys when we're door knocking. I was in Altoona yesterday. Two people brought up clean water and how their kids weren't able to swim, you know, several times this summer, and how they moved here because of our beautiful lakes and, you know, and rivers and parks, and how they feel like it's just been forgotten. So we're getting there. We just really need to, I think, have a coherent plan that we feel like we can actually affect change in the minority. And we're going to try to be more focused on that next session when we have a smaller minority.
Well, that's great. I want to put my 2 cents in here for air quality. That's one of the areas we don't hear enough about, and the data is pretty compelling about the impact of air quality on human mortality. I say that from my perspective as a former member of the Johnson County Board of Health.
Sure.
And so I would lobby with you to pay attention to that particular item.
For sure. My old boss, Tom Harkin, just wrote an op-ed in the Des Moines Register over the weekend about CAFO research and things like that. And there's a conference happening at Drake at the end of the month that I'm looking forward to learning more about with regard to that specific issue with air quality and industrial scale agriculture. So, you know, we will be learning more, and you're absolutely right. We need to focus on that too.
Well, I was going to ask you about that conference later, and So what's the extent of Democratic participation in that conference?
Well, certainly, you know, we've let our folks know about it. I think we have an email going out to our caucus again about it soon. Senator Harkin has let a lot of us know about it, and folks are welcome and encouraged to participate. I think that because I'm going to be on the campaign trail, I think I have one of my staff coming to take notes furiously and give me a briefing afterward. But, you know, we're certainly excited about learning more about these issues. I mean, Sharon Steckman, who's retiring, sadly, has been such a voice against CAFOs and the air quality issue up in Mason City. And so I think that we're going to make sure that our members know about it and can get some more information. If nothing else, you know, here with fewer than 60 days to go, if nothing else, let our staff get some really good information and then let us learn more and see how we can take that information after the election and come up with some policy proposals.
Well, that's great. You know, I could ask my progressive friends what issues they want to hear about in the campaign, and there would be a laundry list as long as my left leg here. But yeah. Let me ask you about a couple of those. Number one, there's some concern about transparency over the school shooting in Perry. Yeah. Are Democrats doing anything to bring more information to light about that?
Yeah, it's funny you'd say that. This morning, not funny, but this morning in the Des Moines Register, there was a story about how each Dallas County attorney candidate would handle this transparency issue going forward. And me, as a trained journalist, you know, I care a lot about transparency and, you know, freedom of information, and more information is better for the public. I'm very concerned about that. And so after I read where those two candidates were, I actually added it to my list to talk with my staff about this week, because we need to know more. And I'm not at all happy with the ongoing investigation language that she used, but she won't confirm that there's ongoing investigation. You know, I just have some concerns with what we're getting here, but I'm still sort of learning about that. As I saw, I think it was just last week where they said that they weren't going to release that information. So we're trying to figure out what we can do going forward. It's on my list for the team this week because it's just not acceptable. I mean, how are we going to prevent something going forward if we don't have the information we need to learn from a tragedy and build from it? And so I actually just saw Representative Nordman over the weekend and asked him about it too. And he didn't, you know, we were at a football game, so he didn't have a lot to say, but we'll keep talking.
All right. Well, I'm glad that's on your desk as something to work on, because that's important. Let's talk a little bit about discrimination and potential deportation of Hispanic workers. As you know, that's an important part of the workforce in Iowa, and there's talk at the national level of doing something to deport Hispanic workers. What are your take on that, or what are the Democrats doing on that?
You know, one of the frustrating things was there was a bill this year that Republicans introduced that was just a terrible bill, and it passed, and it was, you know, going to take folks who are in the state illegally and have the police leave the state and drive them back to their point of origin. It's just, it was a political play. It was playing politics with immigration, when really, if people want to know what's happening with an immigration plan, they need to ask their congressional representatives, including Marionette Miller Meeks, who all backed away from a bipartisan deal, right? I mean, this is a federal issue that needs to be dealt with. But I'm disappointed in the business community, because we've continued to hear them over the years say, we need workers. And this is a place to, you know, immigration is a way to get more workers in the state. And business has said they needed that. I don't know why they're not pushing back against, you know, allowing legal immigrants the chance to be here and do the work that they need. I've also been disappointed with them with their work on, or their silence on, a lot of the anti-LGBTQ bills that have passed the legislature over the last few years. These all affect workforce. And all I hear from the business community is, we need more workers. We need more workers. Well, they're not doing anything to keep workers here, and they're not speaking up when immigration policies like those proposed by Republicans in Iowa are going to hurt their workforce. So this has to be something that, I mean, Democrats are working to make sure that people feel safe and comfortable here and that people are welcome. At the same time, the business community needs to speak up because they have the ear of Republicans and say, what are you doing? You're hurting our bottom line. And that's where I've been really frustrated, frankly, with the folks in the business community who, for a while there, were being pretty open to, you know, immigration opportunities because it helped with their workforce. Now they're silent, and Republicans are running away with it because they want to play politics. They want to make this election about crime and immigration.
Well, that's one aspect of workforce, I think. The other one that is particularly hits home for me is that our children don't want to live in Iowa. They would rather seek opportunities elsewhere, either because those opportunities aren't available in Iowa, or they just don't want to be part of this anti-LGBTQ plus environment that's here. And so I wonder, what are your thoughts about doing something about this brain drain among our children?
You know, I was one of those folks who left Iowa. And back in 1999, I wrote an op-ed for the Des Moines Register that said, don't give up on Iowans who leave, fight to bring us back. And, you know, even then, I looked at it as I'm planning to come back to Iowa, but I need to spread my wings a little bit, right? My husband and I came back 365 days later. So, you know, we chose Iowa again, but my kids are 22 and 24, and they'll never move back to this state. You know, my daughter got a great scholarship offer to the University of Iowa Law School. Didn't even consider it because she didn't know that she'd be able to, you know, live in a state where she had access to birth control or access to, you know, fairness and equity and things like that. Certainly in Johnson County she would, but what about the state? So, and you know, I work with students all day. None of them want to stay in this state. And I think what we need to do is, I mean, I've been bringing in business community in every single year, sitting them down and chambers and partnerships and saying, what are you doing? Where is your line in the sand? And frankly, they've been chicken about it. They're not speaking out. They'll tell me behind the scenes, oh, we know it's bad. It's bad for workforce. We can't get young people to come here or stay here. And they don't do anything about it. And so, I mean, at some point, you know, how many tax cuts can you get corporations? What good are they? Can it get workers? And so, you know, we're going to start seeing things like companies moving to Mexico, like Deere had to do. I mean, we just as a state are not focused on the future. Republican majorities in this state are focused on taking us back to the past. And there's a real cost to that. That's why we introduced legislation. You know, our 4-point people over politics plan is all stuff that's popular with more than 50% of Iowans, but also really popular with Iowans under 30. And we're trying to show them that there's a party here who's ready to fight for the things that you care about. And if you can help us get back into balance, we can get some of that stuff done.
All right, great. Takes care of my question list. As a former journalist, you got us right through that quickly. Do you have anything else you would like to add for our readers?
Just that, you know, I think that Johnson County has been such a leader, and we've seen states, we've seen counties like Johnson County, Polk County, really grow in the party and try to help other counties grow. And I just want to give a shout out to the Johnson County Democrats for the work they're doing to help with Scott County and help, you know, get the folks out in Scott County energized, organized, and ready to go. The Democrats in Johnson County are leaders across the state, and that means a lot to us when it comes to helping people organize and get out the vote. But also, this state is more balanced than it looks on paper right now. We have 2 of our 4 congressional districts targeted. We have, you know, the DLCC has gotten involved in races. We can be more purple, and this year is the year to make it happen. So we're really excited that folks are going to turn out and bring some balance back to the state.
Well, thanks so much, Jennifer, for your time today. Again, for our listeners, the event this Friday the 13th is Tired of Being Scary. That's at North Ridge Pavilion in Coralville. It's open to the public from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. I hope you'll consider coming. Thanks again, Leader Conference.